Sign of the Times, Prince Roger Nelson there with the single released in 1987 from his Dublin album of the same name, Sign of the Times. 3 years after his death comes The Beautiful Ones, a book that is part memoir, part scrapbook and full of personal photos and handwritten lyric sheets. Lee's Hand has been reading the book for us and she's with me in studio now. After we were recording the promo last night and I said, a memoir by Prince, and I was at home last night thinking, did I say a memoir by Prince? I did say a memoir by Prince. And have I said something terribly wrong?
And well, no, you haven't really. And because I think the thing about this book was, I know when I read it, my overwhelming feeling was one of sort of sadness, because it's very much a case of a literary life interrupted. The book is, you know, part notes that that Prince had given the, and actually it's not the writer, he's in the editor, which I think is quite cool. This guy Dan, he's got the maddest name, Pipenbring, which I had to say several times before I got it right. But he basically had a sort of talent competition to pick somebody to write his memoir, his autobiography, or his biography. And this guy, who didn't really have a huge amount of experience, but they sort of bonded over an essay that Dan had submitted about why he wanted to write the biography, and he was the chosen one, and Prince then courted him and they sort of developed a relationship. But it was one that was doomed to be truncated very fast because it was only for 3 months. But in that 3 months, Prince had started giving him sort of sheaves of notes the particular sheaf of notes about just less than 30 pages that covered his early life and, you know, growing up at home.
All handwritten.
And, I mean, written beautifully and very fluently. I mean, when you look at, you know, they're reproduced as is in the book and then they're obviously printed.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously a book, anything to do with Prince, the book itself is beautiful. It's glossy and it's real. The production on it is beautiful. But that is really it. You know, after that, I mean, the relationship only lasted 3 months, and then Prince died. I think their first contact was on the 29th of January 2016 and Prince died on April the 21st, 2016. So poor old Dan was left with this massive dilemma. Now what do I do? And obviously there was a demand and a desire for the book. So he eventually gained access to some of the archives that Prince had stored in Paisley Park. And he mined various memorabilia and scrapbook things to put together this book. But, you know, the two interesting sections are the first part, which, you know, Dan actually describes how himself and Prince got together and how their relationship developed. And there's some lovely little insights into, you know, watching him around Paisley Park, where he just, you know, this was his little world. Yeah. You know, he never moved to, he didn't want to go to, you know, New York or L.A. He wanted to stay in Minneapolis, where he grew up and where his family was. And you sort of saw him in the wild, so to speak, you know, just hanging out, watching movies and, you know, jamming and so on. And you get the sense of that, of the building excitement between the two of them, that this was going to be a special project. You know, Prince wanted to sort of solve racism and, you know, a handbook for black entrepreneurship. And this was going to be a special book. And the notes are even suffused with sort of a sense of excitement and playfulness with language. Yeah. And you kind of, you know, little insights that a good writer would have sat him down and winkled more out of him.
And so what our friend Dan had to do was then take these notes and for the latter parts of the book, assemble them in the way he thought Prince might have wanted them to be assembled.
Exactly. So, you know, the notes that Prince gave him basically started from early life up to adolescence, and they touch on, you know, the troubled relationship between Prince's mother and father.
Yeah, because I was going to say, you said the thing about not wanting to leave Paisley Park, and he had every reason to want to get out of Paisley Park.
Yeah.
The family life had been pretty awful.
It had.
That's well documented here, is it?
It's well documented. And again, you know, he does talk about the disintegration of his parents' marriage. His father was a musician. He was called after him, and his mother had been a backing vocalist in the father's band. That's how they met. But they were obviously very different people, and Prince, I think, was very stuck between the kind of caught in the middle. He worshipped his father because his father was a musician and that's what he wanted to do. His mother, I think, was a very sort of strong woman as well, and she remarried and, you know, started another family, and Prince basically ended up bouncing between the sort of the two households, and, you know, until he eventually moved out while he was quite young. So, you know, and in his descriptions of this, there are little hints of, you know, what the effect, the profound effect it had on him. You know, he even talks a little bit about, you know, when they came to talking about the birds and the bees, they just sort of, you know, they just sort of left magazines around, you know, like, you know, mm-hmm. Playboy, I think, or something like that he talks about. And, you know, he, you know, that's where he kind of got his sort of education. You know, he was a kid that was sort of left to his own devices, I think, to, you know, between two very strong-willed parents. And I think these were just the original, the notes. And, you know, Dan, I think, just took all the notes and absorbed them and hadn't got to the stage of the relationship where he could start actually, you know, putting Prince on the couch and psychoanalyzing, you know, where does this, you know, and, you know, stop, take off the gloss, basically. Yeah,
when you get that sense of maybe this jumping from one house to the other, do we get any hint or am I pushing it too much to think that maybe this begins to explain to us the kind of, you know, genre defying and the facility to jump, not quite in the way that Bowie did, almost from persona to persona, but a shape shifting nature that perhaps he needed to have in a situation where he had to behave one way in one place, one way in another, and maybe several other ways to please both people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sort of ambiguity that he had, and he very carefully nurtured, you know, in his personal life, in his onstage persona, and through his music, you know, had roots in that early uncertainty of his young life, and I think, you know, that's what made him such an incredibly unique artist, was this, you know, he was a genre-defying, sort of taboo-busting, you know, shapeshifter who was obviously also just a genius on the guitar and a multi-instrumentalist and, you know, and a beautiful wordsmith. But, you know, that was just it. You know, he could look as innocent and he could sing the song, the dirtiest owl songs, you know, which.
Well, I was just wondering about that, the subject of dirty owl songs and the dirtiest of themes, etc. You know, so unfortunately, we only get up until, I suppose, the point that he was in his adolescence.
Yeah.
That's the bit that had been collaborated between Prince and the editor here, Dan Pipenbring. What about, you know, that ambiguity around, or secrecy perhaps around his sexuality and his sexual activities?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he was sort of, as I think somebody described him, as, you know, carnally promiscuous and he liked girls from an early age. I mean, he, you know, he talks, even in the notes, he talks about his first kiss. And I mean, it was very chaste and it was, you know, he was very young, but, you know, he was interested in girls from an early age. And he had two marriages, both which failed. But he always had this sort of desire to present a sort of like androgynous persona as well. You know, he would be very touchy-feely with you know, some of the male band members on stage as well.
Do you think that was purely
there was an interview he did in 1997. It was probably the frankest interview he did with Chris Rock. And Chris Rock sort of asked him about this and, you know, Prince sort of laughs. It's a really good interview, actually. It's kind of, Prince is quite relaxed and he's, you know, really together. And he sort of said, well, you know, there was a bit of play acting as well, you know. So it all feeds into that wonderful showmanship, you know.
No sense of ambiguity about what he's talking about in this track, or indeed in the title, Get Off, which was a track you wanted us to play, Lise. So here you go. It's for you.
Thank you.
Do is wrong. Get off.
23 positions in a one night stand.
Get off.
I'll only call you after you say I can.
Get off.
Let a woman be a woman and a man be a man.
Get off.
If you want to, baby, here I am.
Here I am. I got the jizz from a friend of yours named Vanessa Bett. She said you told her a fantasy that got her all wet. Something about a little box with a mirror and a tongue inside. What she told me then got me so hot I knew that we could slide. Get up.
23 positions in a one night stand.
Get up.
I'll only call you after you just say I can.
Get up.
Let a woman be a woman and a man be a man.
Get up.
here I am.
Here I am.
Get Off by Prince, and Lee's Hand in studio with us this evening speaking about the new memoir, Prince, The Beautiful Ones, edited by Dan Pipe and Bring. We've touched on the fact that obviously the opening section of this is Prince, the closing section is Dan Pipe and Bring. Did you come away from reading this, and I'm going to call it a memoir since I think that's what they're billing it as. Did you come away from this memoir knowing anything more about the ambiguity that you've expressed to us before playing that very straightforward track with no ambiguity?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think so, because, you know, Dan, for a start, I think, was a very acute observer. And in his descriptions of Prince moving around Paisley Park and his interactions with him, I think he did give us insights.
Yeah.
Because he obviously got Prince at a kind of in a relaxed mode. And I got the impression that, you know, he was at a stage of his life where he was beginning to think about his sort of his legacy as well. And he wanted to get his story down. And having spent his life running away from, you know, letting people in to the real Prince and, you know, trading on ambiguity and being enigmatic, I think he was quite open. And, you know, there was little nuggets that, you know, you'd sort of mine out of it. And, you know, he was a big fan of Stephen Colbert, for instance, you know.
Like, we quoted earlier in the programme.
Well, there you go. How beautifully serendipitous. And, you know, when you look at the photographs and the sort of the stubs of some of his father's sort of ticket stubs, just some of his father's shows and some of the photographs, you do get a sense. And even right. through his own writing, you do get a sense of it. But the biggest thing is just desperately sad that he never got a chance to actually write this book.
All right. And worth the read is definitely what you're saying.
Worth the read.
All right. That's Lee's Hand speaking to us about Prince, The Beautiful Ones, which is published by Penguin Random House.